is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
We'll give you an update on today's program of Umpqua Community College and the school's president for a few more weeks. Dr. Deborah Thatcher, thanks for being on with us today.
Thanks, Kyle. It's a pleasure to join you.
So overall, what has it been like to lead a college during the past 12 months?
Well, I can certainly say it's nothing that I ever thought I would be doing, or anyone else, I guess. But we've kind of been dealing with what everybody else does, constant uncertainty and, you know, rules imposed from outside to save us from ourselves, I guess. But we all handle it in different ways and been very mindful of the impact on people as they work remotely and deal with social isolation. But I tell you, some of the coolest things have come from this, in that we've seen a lot of creativity and adaptability. You know, our faculty and staff are learning to use technology in different ways. Our students are learning how to learn in different ways. We've had federal funds that have helped us out, both the college and students. And so you know, as much as I would love to say this, I would love for this to have never happened, I think we've learned a lot from it and been able to move the dial on a few important things.
I think that when you look at the field of education, it's been one of the areas maybe most affected in terms of pushing technology forward very quickly.
Absolutely. And I must say that we've been fortunate to have that funding from the federal government, and some of it passed through the state in order for us to make that happen, just to both to help our students as well as to get the college up to speed. And it's been a godsend, really, and is transforming the way we operate, and will be, you know, we'll still go back and do some traditional things, but we'll be changed forever in our ability to do some things differently.
So after the past 12 months, many things have changed in lots of places. What is your enrollment like now compared to a year ago?
Well, you know, a year ago was the first spring term 2020 was our first term when COVID hit. And we saw a big decline in enrollment. But what's interesting this year is we're up over 4% compared to last year. So we find that to be heartening. People are adjusting little by little. We're bringing back some face-to-face. This fall, we hope it'll really be changed. Even though we won't be back fully face-to-face, we're going to be offering a lot of hybrid type classes where part-time you're on campus, part-time you're from a remote area, wherever you choose to work remotely. And so I think that's going to be really attractive to people and start getting people back to their pursuing their educational goals.
Looking back now, would you have anticipated an uptick in enrollment?
Right at this point, at, you know, spring term, why now? But and I didn't anticipate it. But at the same time, we've been putting in so many services to try to make things better for our students, to support them, to provide access to technology, to provide help when they're dealing with all of the things that they're dealing with in addition to education. So getting them the services they need for food and housing and childcare and so forth. And so maybe it's just some of that's paying off. Maybe people are learning, are coping better. Maybe families are doing better. Maybe the vaccine's helping. There's probably a lot of things coming together. So I'm just pleased in the direction we're moving.
Now, what has been your role, or rather the role of your board of directors for the college in dealing with all these COVID shifts?
Well, the board has been wonderful. First, they approved the plan we had. We were required by the Oregon Health Authority and HEC and the governor's office to put together a plan to show how we were going to enforce the rules of engagement in terms of social distancing and safety and all of that, and how were we going to conduct classes. So they approve that, but then they're also by our side, helping us, supporting us, endorsing us as we're working through, you know, remote delivery and how we give people the support we need, how we get faculty and staff who are working in conditions so that they can do their jobs the best. So they're always asking for updates, they're providing input, and they're being incredibly supportive.
For athletics, over the past few years, the college began offering more sports. Has that helped you to gain more students?
Well, absolutely, but it's helped us in a really important way. So when I came here, we had maybe 36 or so student athletes, and now we're close to 200. But the reason that number is so significant isn't just the raw numbers, is that these are full-time students. So these are students are here, they're engaged, they're taking full-time classes, they are involved in their community because our student athletes do a lot of service. They provide a lot of opportunities for the community to attend events, well, once COVID is over. But they've changed the face of the college in many ways. So, yes, it helps in enrollment, but it helps the college and community in many other ways as well.
And it's also posed some challenges in terms of where to house these folks.
Oh, absolutely. And I tell you, thank goodness for a lot of people providing support, for our athletic director, Craig Jackson. He's out there working with his coaches and others to find housing for them, and it's just going, we're going to keep on working. You know, we've been very fortunate to lease the Flegal Center and some other places we lease, and it is a challenge, and it will be there for a while yet to come.
Do you anticipate at some point putting some housing on the campus?
You know, that notion has been explored for over 20 years, and it's always a possibility. Funding becomes a big issue, and that's probably like it is for other agencies and the things they want to accomplish. Funding is always going to be the thing, and you know, where is it in the queue in terms of priorities for the college? And that's the kind of construction that the state does not provide matching funds for. So we would have to raise all that money locally, either through a bond or through donations, and that's a significant amount of funds to make that happen.
Now, while enrollment is up, some recent press release talked about challenges in enrollment in some of the programs. Talk about what process you have underway.
Well, we've been doing this for a couple of years. We're looking at all of our programs that are chronically under-enrolled. And we especially have trouble in some programs in the second year of the programs. And so we go through a process of looking at them. There are probably half a dozen under review right now. And we look at why is it? Are we not meeting the need? Does the curriculum need to be changed? What can we do differently? But the interesting thing is these are conversations that we have internally, and we have them with our advisory committees, and we have them with our industry and business partners and so forth, and we come up with solutions. A good example is auto, because that one has been made public. We closed two associate degree programs, but this fall we'll be starting a new a one-year certificate, because that's what our students wanted, and it looks like what the employers support, and we've got incredible support for that. So we just changed. We didn't get rid of auto. We changed the direction to make it a more viable and sustainable program. And that's what we're doing with a lot of programs. How do we make changes so that we can sustain them, meet student needs, meet community needs, make good use of our limited resources?
Do you think because of the size and just the way a community college works, the community colleges are able to be a little more nimble and make adjustments like this?
Well, you would hope so, but you know, we're subject to a lot of rules, just like others are. We can make really quick adjustments when we do things like workforce development courses. Those are very they're much more easy to put together in a quick amount of time. But the auto, for example, we just now got our feedback really literally this week from the state. They have to approve all of this, and it takes sometimes months and months. So in a way, we're a little nimble. But at the same time, if we want to listen to the voices of the community, of our partners, our faculty, and our students, those things take a little time to work through.
Going to take a break on Inside Douglas County. More when we come back with College President Dr. Deborah Thatcher. The interview podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1245 at News Radio 1240 KQEN. Douglas County, 1247, News Radio 1240, KQEN. Lars Larson coming at 1 o'clock on tomorrow's program, an in-depth look at the Umpqua Valley Arts. Sandy McGee and Sarah Holborough will be on to talk about that organization. We're talking about Umpqua Community College today, President Dr. Deborah Thatcher, and we were just talking about some of the challenges in enrollment in some of the programs. Now, historically, music and theater has gotten a lot of excitement in the community, packed performances at a lot of venues, but talk about some of the current concerns you have about those two programs.
Well, let's start first by saying let's set the last year aside. So we're not using COVID as a way to measure the enrollment of these programs because they were dramatically impacted as a result of that. But we don't count that. But even prior to that, we had some serious issues with having sufficient numbers in our theater classes, especially. All of them were under-enrolled. And in music, it's mostly second-year programs, second-year courses, as well as some of the ensembles. But, you know, I don't think these are insurmountable. We have, we're putting together groups of faculty and community members and students to examine how we might do things a little bit differently, how we can attract students to those programs, because they do provide great opportunities for students. Both people who want to major in those areas, as well as students who just love music and theater and want the opportunity to participate in courses or ensembles or productions. So, you know, like it's just like every other program, though. We are going through a process to find out how we can do things differently and not to get rid of them. And so, unfortunately, there was a message that went out to the community that we're trying to get rid of them. We're not, and we never had planned to do that. We just need to modify our practices so that we can sustain things. So we're going to be able to do it, I have no doubt.
So what can you tell us, I guess, a little bit more about this process and the evaluation that's going on and also when a decision will be made?
Well, so the provost, who is oversees all of our academic programs, is working with the faculty to put together task forces, one for theater, one for music, and those task forces will include not only faculty, but students, people hopefully will have some professionals in those fields, as well as community members, people who are involved in productions and performances and so forth, who want to be part of the solution. And they will work, they're actually going to work pretty fast and furious by their own choice to try to have a business plan for those programs in place by the end of this term so that we can start implementing it in fall and then reevaluate by December. So we don't want this to languish and go on forever and ever. We want to figure out a solution and act on it so that it benefits our students as well as the community.
You mentioned not counting this past year with COVID because of its obvious implications to these programs in particular. Do you feel like if you got past the COVID issues, you would see a somewhat of a change fairly quickly?
Well, again, whatever it was that was happening before COVID needs to be addressed. And that's what we have to get to. Why is it that theater wasn't being well enrolled? Did we not advertise? Did we not offer the kind of courses people want? Are our courses transferring? We didn't really have a major in that program or a degree in it. It was just all optional courses. Whereas music is a degree program, and it is articulated with Southern Oregon University. And it's a phenomenon a lot of community colleges face. Students come in the first year, they get started, they're feeling good, and they go ahead and transfer. how can we make that second year more attractive to them so that they stay here, finish their degree, and then transfer, so they get the benefits of 2 years of community college, the value they have by going there instead here instead of going on to a four-year. So we have to get to the bottom of that and then figure out how we can change our practices.
Talk about,
and again, we've got a lot of smart people sitting in the room that's going to work on this. So I'm sure they're going to come up with some pretty marvelous solutions. And it is a business perspective, though. They have to come back to show us how this is going to work and how the programs will be viable.
So talk about some of the other programs that are getting particular scrutiny where you're concerned about the enrollment levels.
Well, so Kyle, there are several programs that do that, but to be honest, we give those programs an opportunity to work with their advisory committees and their industry partners sort of quietly behind the scenes so that we don't raise a lot of angst in the community. You know, and you can see what happened when we had sort of some people afraid that where we were going was to get rid of programs. And so a message went out to the community that alarmed people. We don't want to alarm people. We aren't trying to get rid of programs. We're trying to strengthen them. So I'd really rather not say specifically, but I can say there are about half a dozen programs that we are working on, not to get rid of them, but to strengthen them, make them meet student needs better, increase enrollment. And it's actually kind of an exciting thing because it makes you sit up, examine what you're doing, refresh what you're doing, listen to a lot of different voices, and be sure we're doing the best we can by our students.
How important are these partnerships with the various industries involved with the programs?
Well, actually, they're essential. None of these things can we do without those partnerships. You don't offer welding without working with people in the welding industry. You don't offer the arts without working with people that are in the arts. So it gives us those eyes from outside. Are we doing what needs to be done? Are we current with what's going on in that world? And often they provide expertise that help us with teaching. In some cases, like in auto, they provide us resources to use for our students. You know, you look at nursing, if we couldn't exist without our community partners. It's essential that they have, you know, nurses have a place to go out and practice what they're learning in class. So, you know, a lot of what a community college does is built upon those very essential partnerships.
You only have a few weeks left before your retirement. When exactly is the exit, and what kinds of things do you have to tackle before then?
Well, my official last day is June 30th, and we are full steam ahead on everything that we normally do. We have our strategic plan that we're continuing to work on. We've got to make the transition for COVID from what we're doing now and planning for possibilities for ahead. We are have a lot of accreditation reports coming up in the next 2 years, and we're working on those now. And of course, the most exciting event of the year is our commencement, or as we call it for this year and last year, our car-mencement, because it's a drive-through commencement. So there's no lack of things to do. We are quite busy, and I am quite busy.
Talk about your future plans once you do retire.
Well, we've chosen to live close to family in our retirement ages. It's not something I've done in my professional career. I've worked all over the country, and now we're going to try to settle down a little bit. And to be honest, the plans are pretty vague at this point, other than relocating, re-establishing ourselves with family, and then we'll just see how it goes from there.
Now,
I can say that it's interesting that the community I'm moving to, with a lot of my husband's family, they're very involved in the arts and especially in community theater. So I have no doubt that some way we will be drawn into that world as well.
And are you still planning to have some role in education, or is this an actual retirement?
Am I going to pass the retirement or fail it? Is that the question? You know, I don't know, Kyle. When we move, it'll be a lot what's going on in that community, because it's a very small community we're going to, but I do not plan to do something like consulting, but I may be able to be involved in the local schools or something as time goes on. We'll just see. I'm open to a lot of things.
Dr. Deborah Thatcher, president of Umpqua Community College, on today's Inside Douglas County at 12:57.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.